Going through a divorce can make our blood boil. When we are finally handed a judgment of divorce, which is a legal document saying the court confirms the marriage is dissolved, all we want to do is celebrate. But before you throw yourself a party, think again. Not to burst your bubble, but many people find themselves heading right back to the scene of the stress because one side decides not to play by the rules of the enforced agreement. What happens and what do? Well, here to explain this is Sandra Radner, a New York-based lawyer and author of the book, You're Getting Divorced, Now What? Sandra, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Alyssa. I'm glad to be back.
And we are so lucky to have you back. You know, I just made reference to this amazing book, which I'm holding a copy of right now, 12 amazing, amazing chapters. And there's one I want to highlight, which goes to the topic of what we're discussing today, called Going Back to Court After Divorce. Now, it's a sad reality many people find themselves in. But if it does happen, what is one to do?
Well, one of the things that's really important to do is to know what's in your agreement and know what in every divorce. I'm just going to backtrack for a second. Every divorce ends with a divorce agreement and a court order, which is your divorce decree or your divorce judgment. So different jurisdictions might have a little bit different names for them, but it's basically the same thing. In New York, for example, the agreement is called a stipulation of settlement, but it could have other names. That agreement must be as detailed as possible so it could be enforced. And you have to know what's in your agreement. You should know what you're supposed to be getting for spousal support or child support or what was supposed to be divided up as far as distribution of the marital assets or if you were dividing up the retirement accounts, when you're supposed to be getting that. What expenses is your spouse supposed to be paying for the children? And the reason it's important to know those things is if you don't know them, you don't know when they weren't adhered to or when they were violated. If they are violated, you have to go back to court to enforce them, enforce those agreements if your former spouse is not agreeing to do what they're supposed to do. So that's when you have to go back.
Yeah, and that can be confusing for us because they have the perception once they get this document, they're done.
Yes, people think that, but it's only true if the person agrees to do what they were court-ordered to do. If they don't, that doesn't happen.
Now, you say an agreement has to be specific as possible. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to enforce. Why is that? And for people who are working on these documents right now with their attorneys, you know, what are some of the things they should put in there to avoid this?
Well, one example is one of the things that's always put in is the parenting time schedule, when you're going to see the children. So say, for example, the agreement just said that you were going to split the holidays evenly without specifically saying who got what holiday, or, for example, a lot of agreements will say one parent will have the children for 4th of July on odd years and the other parent will have the child for 4th of July on even years. And the reason we get that detailed is so that there's no confusion. So no one could say, no, I want the children this year. Like, you have a court order that says what you're supposed to do. It's the same thing. Say, for example, you have a special needs child. Well, you want to put in what's going to, how that child is going to be taken care of. If you have, for example, a child that's never going to be able to be independent, your agreement should say who's going to be caring for that child. So your agreement has to be specific to your situation. Another example is retirement accounts. Sometimes a person is not, the agreement's not specific enough about the retirement accounts. So say, for example, it just says the retirement accounts are to be divided, but it doesn't state the name of the retirement account, the address of the plan, the amount of money that was in the account, the amount that's being divided. How does the court enforce that? They have to know where it is, how much it is, and when it was supposed to be divided in order to say that somebody didn't do what they were supposed to do. And that's why it's important to be detailed. So as far as what should be in your agreement, the amount of support should be in the agreement, both the spousal support and the child support. It should clearly indicate when it begins and when it ends. What are the things that trigger the ending of spousal support or child support? That should be in your agreement. Who is going to see the children and when? What is the visitation schedule or parenting time schedule going to be on a regular basis? But what's it also going to be for holidays? What happens when the children have vacations? Who's going to spend time with the children then? It should indicate if the children are not with you, how you're going to communicate with them. Are you going to be able to do FaceTime with them or some other type of communication, whether it's electronic or by telephone? What happens on vacation? Is there going to be an itinerary? So I'm just giving you an example of things that you want to be detailed about. And if you think about everything that you would want to know, that's what has to be in your agreement. If you say that we're going to split all of the marital debt and maybe one of you had student loans, well, in a lot of jurisdictions, the student loans which were acquired before you got married is the debt of just one party. So if you think that your spouse is going to divide that evenly with you and you think that's what your agreement was, then it has to specifically state in there that those student loans are being divided equally between the two of you to pay them. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Does this also include the children's medical benefits? Who's responsible for that? Any out-of-pocket costs that the health provider may not cover? College for people
Absolutely.
Who have children that are older?
Absolutely. Every life event. So that's a very good point, because if you don't put in who's going to pay for the health insurance and what happens if that person who, for example, was responsible for the health insurance, if they lose their job because the health insurance was through the job, then who pays for the health insurance? What's the contribution from the other spouse towards the premium? That should be in the agreement as well. How long will you pay health insurance? Right now, a child can be on a parent's health insurance until the age of 26. But what if the law changes? You know, then what happens? Are you agreeing to do it to 26 even though you're only responsible for support till 21? That should be in the agreement as well. College, there's no requirement. Excuse me?
No, I'm sorry. Please continue.
I was going to say in college, there's no specific requirement for a parent to pay for college, but if you agree to it, then it should be in the agreement. Are you agreeing to just pay for a state college, or will you agree to split the amounts for a private college as well? Does it include room and board? Does it include college preparatory courses? You get the idea. The more detailed you are, the more predictability you have in what's going to be happening.
Now, for those who have to go back to court, walk us through the process of what it takes to get back in front of the judge.
Well, you usually have to file papers with the court, a petition or a motion or some kind of a pleading that goes in front of the court to say that something was done wrong. You have to show, here's what the agreement was, here's what was supposed to happen, here's my proof that it did not happen. So let's use the example of child support. Spouse is supposed to pay, or former spouse is supposed to pay X amount per month in child support. And that child support wasn't paid. So you'd have to show the agreement that shows the amount of support that was supposed to be paid, proof that you did not receive that money, proof that you asked your former spouse to pay that money and they still didn't pay it, and then you go to court. With all of that proof, that's what you would be able to be successful. If you went to court and say, for example, you did not attach the court order or agreement to your papers, indicating that what the amount of support should be, then how are you going to prove that to the judge? So the judge needs to have all the information in front of them so that they can make a decision.
Now, this is going to entail a lot of work, and most people are going to start freaking out about legal fees again. Who's on the hook for those bills?
Well, very important. You, in New York, at least, as a matter of law, if one party has to bring the other party to court to enforce their divorce agreement, the party who didn't do what they were supposed to do has to pay the reasonable attorney's fees of the party that did what they were supposed to do, that had to bring them back to court to enforce it. But you can also have written into your agreement the same thing, that if one party has to bring the other to court, that they have to pay the attorney's fees of the party who was successful, the one who didn't do anything wrong. And you could put in the agreement, instead of it just being reasonable attorney's fees, which is something that the court's going to decide, they pay all of your attorney's fees. And if it's in the agreement, that's enforceable, meaning that Say you spent $5,000 in attorney's fees, and the judge said, you know what, I think that should have been $2,500. You're still out $2,500, right, because the judge only awarded half the amount of what you paid. But if your agreement says that the other party is responsible for all of your attorney's fees, you would get that $5,000 instead.
I want to ask this last question to you very quickly. In terms of child support and spousal support, what suggestions do you have for someone to get these payments in a timely manner?
Well, the most important thing, in New York, we have something called the Support Collections Unit, and I think most states have something that's analogous. And what that is that it goes through the court system to take the wages directly from the former spouse's or the paying spouse's paycheck, or they can send the money directly into the Support Collections Unit. The reason that's important is because the Support Collections Unit will keep track of the money that's paid. So if it's not paid timely, they'll know right away. And if there's no payment of child support or spousal support, they'll start doing things like suspending a license or maybe taking the person's passport until they pay. And they'll even help you start an action in court. So that's the best way
to
do it.
Wow, this is so valuable. Sandra, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us. For anyone who wants to get in contact with you to learn more, how can they do that?
They can go to my website at www.radnalaw.com, radnalaw.com.
Sandra, thanks so much for joining us. Stick around. We have a lot more when we come back.
Thank you.